Oi! Oi, governor.
Yes?
Why don't you suck my spangle?
Oh.
You can spoff me mooey.
Oh. I mean, you could ask a little nicer, I guess. You could...
Get me some spoff in the mooey unless I turquoise balloon ya.
Oh. God damn it. Jesus. Turquoise balloon ya. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is the Indie Film
There's
Review.
So much. So many quotable lines in this film.
Oh, back-to-back bad British accents on this show. This is what you can...
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Look forward
to. No, we did it again, my friend.
My bad.
You know what? No, you're good.
Stay tuned for next week where I'm going to do it a three time and count the listeners run away.
Three times, lady.
Did I say a three time?
A three time. Yeah, no, you said it right. It's the world that's wrong, Dan. It's the world that's wrong. So hello again, everybody. I'm Jared. That's Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
You're looking so handsome.
I can't master basic grammar school English.
I'm doing well, bad at all the things. Yeah. We try our best, though.
See, I'm trying. I'm crying.
That's right. We try so hard. Okay. I could really derail this. I'm not going to. Dan, we watched Lava.
Lava. I don't know why it's called Lava.
Lava, baby. I could give it a guess later on when we talk about it. I could figure it out. We can figure it out together. So Lava 2001 is a comedy crime thriller written and directed by Joe Tucker. Now, Joe Tucker, let's get into this guy. He's done a lot of very interesting films. Chernobyl, Greed. He did the movie Bronson.
Oh,
which
shit, really?
Really fucking good. Yeah, he's done quite a bunch of other things here. Now, I don't know if he was only acting in it.
He might have only been acting.
Oh, you know what? You know what? I had to take that back. I think this is his only directorial debut.
Oh.
I think the other films he was just acting in. Okay. So, for this to be his only film is very fascinating to me. I wonder why he didn't make more films.
This film... It's of a time period.
It is a time capsule, for sure.
It could have propelled him into doing more, but I feel like it's at the tail end of whenever these type of movies were popular, which...
Yes.
There's a sweet spot in all cinema. Like, a lot of people say it's Hollywood, but I think it's just every world cinema. It's from 1999 to, like, 2000, like, just for some reason that year... So, mm-hmm. Basically, the filming year of 1998, everything was amazing.
Do you feel like this film reminds you stylistically of any other film?
Run, Lola, Run.
Yeah. It kind of gave me some Amelie vibes, and not because of the story, but because of how manic the camera work is and how crazy everything can get. But Dan, before we go any further, please give us your 30-second elevator pitch of what Lava is.
Oh, man. This has an interesting story. So, This is another revenge tale about a gang member in London, or he's not in London. He's in like an outer city, and they reference London quite a bit in the film. And anyway, this kid and his brother are in the arcade, and this kid, well, he's not a kid. What do you want to say? Like 18, 20?
Yeah, I would say like he's in his 20s, but he's special.
Yeah, he's
a touched individual.
He definitely has. Somewhere on the spectrum.
Yes.
Anyway, he witnesses his brother get just maimed by this other guy at this arcade. And he was too scared to do anything about it. Turns out at home, he's living with an abusive father because his mother died. And he has this other brother.
It's just his friend.
Is it a friend?
It's
this very much a mentor figure who's... like kind of an older brother just teaching him how to do things. Mm-hmm. And the older brother's like, you know what? I'm going to get revenge with you. And you're going to be, well, I'm going to let you come with me because you can not be scared anymore, essentially.
Yeah.
So they go on this quest
to help him. Yeah.
To find the guy who beat him up. And along the way, they meet quite a few people.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you don't have to get into all that just now. Yeah. Just know that a simple revenge plot spirals out of control into madness. It becomes insane where this movie goes. And all because of this one guy beat up this dude's brother and then basically made him wheelchair bound. Like, he can't move or talk or speak. And it's just affected their lives in such a way. But we have to, I mean, the camera work in this movie, Dan.
Yeah.
Is so spectacular.
It's incredible.
So how did you feel about the first 5 minutes of this film? What were you feeling?
I was on board 100%. I'm like, this movie.
You were? Okay.
Like I said, it's that indie, late 90s feel of, we're just going to do whatever the fuck we want. We're going to do the camera the way we want to do it. We're going to make people feel kinetic with the actual celluloid. And oh my God, the film grain on this movie. Like, there was so much love put into this.
Oh, I love how the film looks.
It looks incredible. And doing that with a portable camera, it just, you think it was guerrilla filmed at all?
During this entire film, there's a carnival going on.
Yeah.
So I don't know how a film like this, I don't know what the budget was, but how would they get all those people to do a carnival?
I believe the budget is £850,000.
Oh, yeah. Then they definitely were doing some guerrilla filmmaking. Yeah. There's no way they would be able to lock down that whole street and have that actual carnival going on, which is so cool. So it's like, they had to get all those shots and get enough of them to make the fucking film make sense to what was going on with this, with the whole crowds and everything. Man, that is so real. Because, like, some of the shots in this movie are just spectacular.
Yeah.
The things this guy does with the camera just blows my mind. Like, he puts a camera inside the microwave.
Yeah.
And you're watching it.
See, what's beautiful about that scene is the first time he does it, I'm like, what the fuck am I looking
at? Yeah, we don't know what we're looking at.
I'm like, what is going on? And then you get the reverse shot and you see a microwave and you don't really think anything of it. And then it cuts back to it and you're like, oh, she's looking into the microwave.
Yeah.
We're looking at her from the microwave.
It's really cool. So I will say, the reason I brought up the 5 minutes question is because during the first 5 minutes of this film, I had no fucking idea what was going on.
I like the chaos.
I was so lost.
That's what it is.
There were so many characters, and for what we do, taking notes, I was like, I might start giving up on taking notes. I did eventually take at least a page of notes, but I was so... Because, okay, so you have Philip, the younger brother, right? His older brother's been maimed and mangled. Then you have the military vet who got home from the war. His wife cheated on him. He's kind of going a little crazy from PTSD or whatever. He wants to help Philip get revenge on the dude who beat up his brother. This guy's named Smiggy, which is really funny because Philip says it all the time. He's like, Smiggy, but what are we going to do, Smiggy? No, that's only one group of people. Then we have the Rastafarians.
Guess who that is?
Who?
Smiggy.
Who? It's Joe Tucker. Holy shit.
He's the fucking director. That's awesome.
Oh my God. I didn't even realize that. That is amazing. He is really good in this movie.
He is really good in this movie.
Holy shit. I had no idea Joe Tucker was Smiggy. That's fantastic. God damn. Why didn't he make more movies? Anyways.
Yeah.
So then we have the Rastafarians. They're hardcore drug dealers and gangsters who will just fucking kill you. And there's this running joke about him and his Beamer, like, he doesn't want his other friends to, like, drive his car or whatever, touch his car. He's like, anybody
guys.
Touches my car, I'm going to kill him.
It was awesome.
Pretty great. Then we have the two girls who are doing drugs, and she has, like, this kid. And
you have Julia,
she's, like,
and
really
I don't remember
abusing.
Her friend's name. So Julia is, she's kind of a crux of this. She's a crux of the film because she has a kid. She does drugs constantly. She's a terrible mother. And her best friend is like, we should go to carnival together. But she fucks up the drugs that she's supposed to deliver to this guy named Nev.
Yeah.
And the guy who beat the shit out of that, you know, the character that is now kind of paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
He is with her?
Yeah, they're together.
Yeah.
So when he gets out of jail, his domicile is where this woman lives. And she steals drugs from the Rastafarians.
Because she fucked up the drugs that she was going to give. Yeah.
So now there's a triangle of fucked uppery where all of these characters are now becoming intertwined. And
it happens
Smiggy finds
fast as fuck.
Yeah, it happens very, very quickly. And then Smeegee finds a cell phone of one of the Rastafarians and puts it in his pocket. So now it's like even they are kind of connected to them.
Right.
And it's just, and this happens in like so early on, really fast. Okay, question for you, Dan.
Yes.
Did you have to turn on subtitles for this movie?
Yes, I did.
Because
I mean, I got used to it maybe 50 minutes through, but like I had to read a lot.
Well, I couldn't understand what most of the characters were saying because they talk so fast. So I
started laughing so hard at the fucking you know, quotes from the film. You have,
let's hear them.
Julia says, "Suck my spangle," because she's horny.
Nice.
She, and is it Dennis is the guy who she's like he's supposed to be with? He's like, no, I don't want to. I don't got time for that right now. And she's like, oh, but come on, you can spoff on my movie. And I'm like, okay.
I don't get what is up with Dennis. He leaves, right? And then the whole time everyone's waiting for him to come back home. He's just trying to make phone calls for the long, like he's just making phone calls over and over again. Like, what's happening there? I wonder, like, what he's supposed to be doing that whole time. I guess that's, like, part of the joke.
Right.
So, Dan, do you have a question for me about this film before we go any further?
Yes, I do. Films from this time period, it's in that vein of film, and I just want to know, how did you react to it? Like, was anything off-putting at all?
No. I mean, it was just a difficult barrier to enter on. You know, like, there was like an initial wall
mm-hmm.
that I did have to push through to get into the zone because like at first the comedy wasn't landing. I wasn't getting what was going on, but the more I was immersed in the film, it felt better and it started to click more. Like I think it didn't really start clicking until Philip and Smeegee went to go buy the gun mm-hmm. to go do the crime. And that scene was just so funny and so great to me that it, everything started to make sense. And then from then on, the whole film was just fantastic.
So my follow-up question is, how many times did you laugh?
Quite a few. I mean, I really started laughing after that. I mean, it wasn't like a laugh a minute or anything, but whenever I would laugh, it would definitely be impactful. This is one of the darkest comedies.
Yeah.
Like, you know when people say, like, this is a black comedy? Like, this is a dark comedy. I don't know if there is a darker comedy that I have seen of
That's
something
a good
like
point.
This film is morbid. And some of the acting is so good.
Yeah.
And some of the performances at the end, especially with Philip at the end when he's giving a speech,
mm-hmm.
I was, like, almost in tears. I was so emotionally drained by everything that was going on. And then they just punchline it at the end. They're like, oh, okay. And then something silly happens. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is a comedy. I totally forgot. Because there's such drama in this that is executed so well.
Yeah, for sure.
So, wow.
This is also, Jared, I don't know if you knew this.
Sure.
This is the third film that I am proud to have reviewed that features a fart. I feel like there's something to be said for fart cinema, and I believe we're doing a very great job of curating.
Curating? Yes. Ah, yes. The fart cinema. why don't we get into it, I guess, then, because there's so many weird, wacky scenes we could talk about.
Oh, yes.
So this film, I think, could benefit from a sequence of events following Philip and Smeegee and their journey of, like, what they do, right?
I am going to disagree with that and say the chaos favors it, or the chaos makes it better.
Okay. Well, I mean, like, just to try to explain it.
I don't care about that. I learned everything I needed to know as it was going
that's
on.
Right,
I'm
that's
like,
right.
okay.
All right,
okay.
So Dan, tell me about a scene you want to talk about.
All right, so the first scene I want to talk about is how terrible this woman is to her child.
Oh, God damn it. Orange juice, kid.
Oh, my God.
Can't get that orange juice.
All he wants is just a mom, and she's so drugged up, and he even expresses, like, he's not just, like, a passive voice either. He's like, I don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, Dennis is coming. You got to be here for the door. He's like, I don't want to. He scares me.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. This little kid, the first introduction to him, he goes to his mom. He's like, "Mom, can I have some orange juice?" And she looks at him and it's just like, "You can't have any orange juice. You're going to piss your pants." She's like, "Get out of here." And then he's like, she says, "Why don't you go inside here?" And she points to her own head and tells him to, like, basically fuck off. Like, just retreat into your own mind and go away, because I don't want to deal with you at all in any capacity.
Crazy.
And I'm like, that is so, like, this kid is so well behaved. And this mom is, but like the comeuppance that this mom gets is fucking amazing. Oh, yeah. This is spoilers, by the way. We're going to spoil the film. I just waved my hands around weirdly. I don't know why I did that. But guys, I think you should watch Lava. I think you should.
Think so too.
I think you should stop Amazon listening Prime. Right now and watch it. Yeah, please get to it. Lava 2001. I really want people to watch this movie. So before we go any further, I don't know. I cannot stress this enough.
Yeah, watch this film.
Please watch this film. It's really good. Okay, back to what we're talking about.
So that was a crazy scene. Another crazy scene. Well, no, it wasn't crazy, but a scene that made me laugh was whenever they go visit Mr. A for the gun.
Mr. Aladdin.
Yes.
I didn't get the Aladdin joke. They're like, why do they call him Mr. Aladdin? And then they just show a bunch of guns.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't get it. But so, okay, they have Philip or whatever his name is, and Smiggy. They're both there.
Smiggy is such an awesome name, too.
Smiggy is a great name. And they're trying to buy a gun. They didn't bring enough money. He gives them this really shitty, like, rusty revolver that barely works, like an old-timey gun. He's like, this is all you can buy for $250 or whatever. And they both go outside to talk it over. But then there's this amazing shot this of just like a close-up of them being outside, and they're talking, like, what should we do, blah, blah, blah. And then when the scene concludes, they pull out and do a wide shot, and we realize that they are on a house that is on stilts, and it's just like in the middle of a field, this weird fucking house, and the stilts are really high up. It's not just like regular, like, we're living on the beach house stilts. It's like a story up of just stilts. And it was so jarring and strange. Like, what are they doing in this tiny, weird house? It made me laugh a lot. And then they go back in and they buy the stupid gun. But like that, like I said, that was the turning point for me of like, oh, okay, this movie's making sense.
Okay.
What about the scenes with the dad berating the son
that
and how close they get so close to his face? And he's like sweaty and gross. And he's like, you're a failure. Just... that stuff, I don't know if it's played for laughs, but it makes you so uncomfortable and it freaks you out.
I don't think it
was.
I think it was supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
It's so good. They did such a good job.
Yeah.
With all that creepy shit. And then when the dad is cutting the son's hair and he accidentally cuts his ear and he starts crying and like cradling his son. Oh, it's so nuts. It's just that one thing like destroyed that whole family. They're just out of control.
So Julia fucks up the drugs. She finds the Rastafarians, and she basically happens upon their stash, and she steals it, and that becomes the place where they're going to have this meeting. Like everybody kind of divulges into Julia's house.
Yep, it becomes Julia's house. The movie.
Yes.
So we have Julia. And Dennis. Dennis says, I'm going to leave. I need to go do some drug dealy stuff. I don't know, whatever. And he's like, the drug dealer is going to show up and...
sample it.
And when he does...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to sample it, then he's gonna buy it or whatever. And I love how even Smiggy is confused by who all the people are. And he's trying to figure out everyone's names.
That was another really great part of the
movie. Because everything is so confusing and just like everything's happening all at once. That even the main character is trying to understand the plot of the film and what the fuck is going on. So then we get Smiggy comes in. He starts doing a bunch of blow with the lady because she thinks that he's the drug dealer.
Yeah.
And that blow is just the thing that takes him over the edge. Like, he's already a PTSD war vet who's just kind of a little,
but
you know, unhinged.
His demeanor is, like, super calm the entire movie.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he's always doing military references and, like, talking about using a compass and, like, that's his stick. And then you have the Philip character who's like, Schmicky, but what are we going to do now?
The dynamic is perfect.
Following orders. He completely trusts Schmicky, you know.
And then Schmicky completely trusts him. Like, he's back in war, basically. Like, he's like, I got a mission to do. I got to trust my bros.
Yeah.
It's so good.
The one thing that really didn't make sense to me is something that happens at the very end.
What?
Which I guess we can talk about it. So Schmicky starts to kill everyone.
Yes.
Everyone that comes in the house, there's a confrontation and he kills them. And it escalates so much that we get to a point where Schmicky is laying on the ground. He's bleeding. Dennis finally shows up. Dennis and Philip have that confrontation, you know, mm-hmm. where he tells him about the turquoise balloon, which is amazing because that's actually...
Are you kidding me? I looked the shit up. Like, as soon as I heard it, they keep referencing turquoise balloon. I'm like, is this slang that I don't fucking know?
Yeah, it's totally made up for the film. It's genius, though. So it's when you love and want to protect someone, you imagine a balloon of protection around them because you want to protect them. And the monologue was so sad. And it just... The guy who plays Philip fucking kills it.
Yeah,
he does such a good job. Several extremely emotionally and like well done scenes. And then, you know, they fight Dennis. Dennis gets knocked out. And then Spiggy's on the ground. He's got a bullet hole in him. And Philip is going to leave. He's like, okay, I'm done. I got what I wanted. I got my revenge. I'm going to leave. There's like dead bodies everywhere. And then Schmicky fucking shoots him because he's leaving. And that's the only part where I'm like, why would Schmicky do that? Why would he shoot his best friend who's getting this revenge for? Now, I mean, I know he's drugged up and fucked up, right? He's going crazy. But it made me so sad that he shot his friend because he was leaving.
Yeah.
I don't know. It really affected me. I was like, no, why?
Well, I mean,
and then after it happens,
you know, he is drugged up and he's fucked up, and there is like logic. Maybe, you know, he's part of the battalion that's, you know, abandoning the mission. I don't know.
Yeah, like, but the mission's over.
Well, yeah.
I don't know, man. But then after he shoots him, he feels really bad about it, and he's like, "Oh, we got to get out of this together." I think there's a codependency between the two,
mm-hmm.
where he was so afraid that Philip was going to leave him. And that Schmicky can't leave because he has a gut wound. No, he got hit in an artery, basically. And he's bleeding out and he's going to die. That he'd rather kill his friend than let him leave the mission, whatever his mission is in his mind. Their dependency is so strong in that way.
Well,
I don't know. It was tragic. It was a Romeo and Juliet, Dan.
Oh, yeah, sure. Romeo and Juliet. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that transpire in the house.
Sure, yeah.
So he does coke. He's super drugged up. Neville comes. He has this argument with him. He's like, who the fuck are you?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what do they have an argument or does he shoot him immediately?
There's an argument because Schmicky thinks that Neville is Dennis.
Yeah.
The guy who they're there to get revenge on. Okay, so everyone who keeps showing up, he thinks that's the guy that they're there to get revenge on. So then Schmicky shoots the fucking dude in the leg, and then Philip comes out and he's like, oh, this is the wrong guy. This is not the right guy. So he kind of contemplates helping him and, like, you know, fixing the situation. He even talks to him as, like, he is a wounded soldier. Yeah. He's like, we're on the same side. But then just shoots him in the head. So that's the kind of, like, fucked up headspace that he's in where friends are foes. Like, he can't distinguish between the two anymore. He even does this with, like, the woman, right? When she's tied up.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, we would never hurt you. We would never hurt you. When we just had a scene where he was doing Russian roulette with a Rastafarian and her, where they were both trying to, like, one of the darkest scenes I've seen in a black comedy like this, where they're both trying to, like, he's making them try to kill each other. And then just after that, he's like, oh, no, we'd never hurt you. It's like, what? What the fuck? This is crazy.
I feel like what would have been interesting is if it makes sense, but what would have been interesting and it would probably make it a completely different movie was if we were, you know, privy to his PTSD and privy to like the thoughts that are racing around his head. But because we aren't, it kind of transforms the experience to like, you know, half the time I'm saying, what the fuck? Like, yeah. Holy shit, this movie's insane.
I mean, you see glimpses of it with the way he treats women and how his relationship with his wife fell apart when he got back from the war. And he references the war a lot, but usually it's in like a positive way.
Yeah.
So I just feel like there's no way for him to adjust to how real life is. So he feels more comfortable in what he's doing now with like just fucking killing all these people than just living his day-to-day life. But again, he's so nonchalant about it.
Yeah.
Which makes it takes it to a whole new level of how crazy this character is. So was there any like final scene you want to talk about, Dan, before we wrap up?
Oh, the gun scene. Oh my god.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So he lets Julia hold the gun. And they took a shit ton of coke. And she basically just has this orgasm holding the gun. And the way they film it, like it's like super close-ups and like this fish angle thing. It was so awesome. It's like they were trying to emulate the high they were getting kind of feeling. And that scene was incredible. Just artistically, I think.
Yeah, it was spectacular. The things that that they do with a camera in this movie, it really elevates this to like a cult classic.
Absolutely. I want to own it for sure. Like, I want to watch it again. It's so good.
Guys, final thoughts. You have to watch this movie. Even if we just spoiled it for you, what we've told you is nothing compared to actually seeing the film and experiencing it. But
like Jared said, just a warning, it is extremely morbid.
It's very dark.
A lot of death.
Yeah. But this is a film I'd absolutely watch with other people and to get them to watch it. Like, yeah, you should see this. And I feel like I would get more out of it watching it again.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of knowing what the plot is, because I'd be able to pick up on the dialogue more. Because, like I said, things are just happening, boom, 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 really fast. But yeah, fantastic. Very glad I watched it. Great pick, Dan.
You can find us on Twitter at Indie Film Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod. You can find us, you can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. And of course, you can just Google us, guys.
Just Google us, guys. Come on. Oh, Necropodicon is a place that you can go to. Necropodicon.com. You can go there and click the link to the Discord and come say hello to us. And you can check out all the other really cool shows we have. There's so many good ones. I like a little community of podcasters and podcastees. And we're out there making the magic happen. So if you like this show, you should check them out too. Thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. Go watch Lava. Why are you still listening to this? You should go watch it.
Yeah, go watch
Dan,
it.
Dan, you have the final word.
Go watch Lava. Not that new show called The Floor is Lava on Netflix.
Hello, I'm Dr. Discord, and I have one question for you. Are you evil? Do you find yourself secretly rooting for the bad guy? Do you find yourself suppressing a little chuckle when somebody else slips and falls? Do you find yourself secretly wishing for global domination? If you answered yes to any of these questions, check out Unnecessary Evil Podcast, where we discuss all things evil, from tips on how to write a better villain to tips on how to be a better villain. I probably won't even leave any booby traps this time. Part of the Necropodicon Network. Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce, easy to listen.